Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us here on the program today as we come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time, streaming live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We're rebroadcast on Sundays at 3 p.m. Pacific time at a2zen.fm, and we archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page, so that you can get this information together, you can put it together the way you want, glean what you want, or as I like to say, take what you need and leave the rest. And that's really what it's about. We don't take everything when something's offered. We just take those things that, as we like to say here on the program, that resonate with you. So we're hoping that there's a lot of resonation, or at least a little. And if you don't want to do anything with it today, there's always tomorrow, next week, next month, next year. And I guarantee you there is going to be. We are not coming to an end on the 21st of December 2012, despite what you've been told, despite what the news media tells you, despite what others are saying, we are going to be here. I have to say that it's been a fascinating week in particular, just lining up some of my guests. Sadly, as I've been telling you for the last few weeks, I was so looking forward to the opportunity of talking with Greg Braden on the 15th of December. And unfortunately, we were halted from pursuing that because on the day that we were supposed to actually record the program, we had a fire here in Santa Barbara. And so his assistant or scheduler, what have you, Lori Wilmot, who I have great respect for, she worked so hard to try to find a time slot, and we thought we'd found one, and then we lost that one, and so on and so on. Well, I have to tell you that this has been happening on a regular basis with a lot of my guests, whether we're live or recording the program, and I'm wondering if that's indicative of the times. Maybe so. Maybe our guest will help us take a look at that a little bit. She is returning to Tell Me Your Story after, I'm going to say, probably 2 or 3, maybe 4 years. Cindy Dale is my guest, and she has a new book that she has co-authored called Togetherness. And it's basically creating and deepening sustainable love. Cindy, thank you so much. Even this interview was a bit of a challenge because by the time we got to this day, this Saturday, the 17th of November, 2012, you, for whatever reason, were totally unaware, oh, I'm going to be on Richard's program.
I know. I'm chuckling here because it's exactly like what you're talking about in terms of Greg. You know, I was like, really? We've got an interview? And I absolutely love being on your show, Richard. I've been on a couple other times. It's always been illuminating for me. I learned so much from you, even though I talk about my own book. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we just kind of, we pinched time, though.
Yeah.
We moved it around a little, created a couple wormholes, and sunk in. So,
there you go.
So we're both very fortunate.
It's fascinating, too, as well, because had an incident this morning, as a matter of fact, where we had a limited time. Obviously, you get up in the morning and you get ready to go and you head out the door and you're usually right on your clock and your time posts are, you hit them and you're able to stop and, oh, I'm going to go ahead and get this cup of coffee or a cup of tea and maybe a little something to eat before I head into the office or what have you. And something happened. Now, this is, I want to talk about this just a little bit from a metaphorical standpoint. I don't want to go necessarily into a literal thing here. And I know that you can expound on this.
I'm going to flow with you on this.
Well, flowing is a good word to use because what was not flowing this morning was the water in the house.
Oh.
And it turns out that the long and the short of it is that the flow was cut off from above us where we live, but they didn't realize that they had turned off our water as well as theirs. But water has a significance in our lives, not just in terms of keeping us hydrated, but even from a metaphorical or even a spiritual perspective, that flow, and again, this is something I think that people need to keep in mind. People are wanting to hold on to stuff because they think there's not enough of it. But when was the last time you allowed water only to flow into your house and not out?
That's a really good point, because it really does have to flow all the way through. If it just goes in, you've got a floodplain being created, or an overflowing washing machine. Or one time when my now 14-year-old was three, you know, there was an amazing number of toys, including full-size Power Ranger action figures that would make it down the toilet. Well, you can only imagine what did not flush. So we've got to have flow. And water, of course, from an energetic point of view, maybe in traditional Chinese medicine or some other esoteric philosophies, in my understanding, is about flow. It's about intuition, emotion. It's kind of an astrological Piscean energy that carries, you know, cleansing, but also intuitive messages from place to place. So, you know, there's some good thoughts that needed to be streaming into your household.
That is the way it's been explained. And even as it is tied to our finances, money in particular. And so whenever we have a clogged drain in the house, and again, either direction that the water is supposed to be flowing through, if either end is disrupted in any way, shape, or form, then I start getting a little bit concerned and saying, I need to get this cleared up, because I don't want this to be the messenger, if you will, the sign that that kind of flow is going to be interrupted. By the same token, because even that mental game that I play there is still generating, is still playing with, even in a slight way, that attitude of lack. This is a sign, oh my gosh, money is, I'm going to have not enough, so I better get this thing cleared up quickly. And yet, I've been quoting this more and more these days, a biblical passage. Jesus is speaking to his disciples, and somebody asked him about, you know, well, we don't have enough money, or we don't have enough of this or that or the other thing. And he uses the example of the birds. They fly through the air, and they don't toil, they don't do anything, and yet they're taken care of. And so we kind of need to take that perspective, don't we?
We absolutely do. And, you know, I was just taught a tip by a good friend of mine who does Kay Grace, who does sound healing. She studied with Jonathan Goldman, who a number of you probably know. And, you know, she said, you know, the way of the affirmation or looking for the negatives is kind of gone. It's not just about stating the positive or, you know, trying to dig for the negative and uproot it. But she gave me a really good tip about asking a positive question in a rhetorical way so that lifts you up rather than takes you down. And I'll give you an example. It would be like, you know, why am I so worthy of the monetary flow that I need? Instead of, I am worthy, it's, why am I so worthy of it? Because your subconscious mind, when hearing a question that way, automatically starts answering it, and it's going to come up with great answers. Well, because I'm cool, because I'm supported by spirit, because I'm part of this universe, because I'm on purpose, and who knows how many wonderful answers you're going to come up with that are going to be flowing, if you would, or positive in nature. So we could even deal with plumbing issue the same way. Why am I so lucky that flow is coming right to and through me? Why am I so fortunate that everything I need is being provided for continually? So it's just kind of a fun tip I just learned, you know, how we can get ourselves opening and expanding, not just kind of going in where we're clunking, you know, and looking for
right.
What's wrong.
Yeah, exactly. And at the same time, I am of the mindset, and maybe this is the mindset of a lot of guys, we want to take care of things. We want to fix things. You know, we want to make sure that everything is working, you know, and that the family is taken care of and so forth. And so we kind of have to be, I think, a little careful of going too far to that extreme. You know, I mean, that's where I was this morning. There was no water, and so I'm trying to solve the problem of where's my wife going to take a shower, because there ain't no way she can do it in the house, well, because there's no water. I mean, we had a trickle, believe it or not, but it was cold water, and there's no way she can do that. We worked it out. We did solve it, and we got on our way. And actually, this goes back to your comment about bending time and wormholes, because in spite of all of that, in spite of the fact that she even called in and told her boss, I'm going to be late, we got there early.
You know, Well, you were obviously in flow. And, you know, from a really practical perspective, Richard, we do need to problem solve. I'm a single mom, two kids, too many dogs, a checklist that, you know, never gets done. I just move it to the next day. But I feel really good when I check things off. So I check them off and go, yay, you know, I got two-thirds done or whatever it is. We do have to monitor our daily lives and keep things moving. And we need to be easy on ourselves, kind of like you're saying, and assume the best instead of keep estimating or guessing for the worst. You know, for instance, one year, and let things be kind of fun.
Yeah.
We're pre-Thanksgiving here, and I remember a few years ago, my mom is in town. I'm the only daughter in town, and my kids were elsewhere. And I said, well, Mom, I'll make a turkey. I'm only going to make a turkey and green beans. I'm not doing mashed potatoes. I'm not doing boxed. I'm not doing real. Green beans and turkey, that's it. So she's so excited because I'm not much of a cook. So I put the turkey in the bag and stick it in the oven and go get my mom at this certain time, and I'm going to take her to the movies after, and because that's my way of doing things. And we go, and, you know, I bring her back, and the turkey's not smelling. I'm going, this is like a very funny bird that doesn't actually, you know, give off an
yeah.
aroma. So I go and check because we're going to eat and I want to get to the movies. And, of course, I have not turned on the stove.
Oh.
So, you know, we all screw up, don't we? And sometimes
sure.
plumbing is just plumbing and it doesn't work. And then we have to punt, and it works better if we have a positive, uplifting, fairly optimistic attitude. So I looked at her and I said, you know, Mom, why don't we just go to the movies and eat popcorn for Thanksgiving? I said, I bet you've never done that. And she is very full-blooded Norwegian and wants to do everything perfect. And she said, no, I haven't. I said, well, we'll do a double header and we'll eat twice the popcorn we normally would. We had a great time.
Yeah.
We had an absolutely amazing time. She still talks about Cindy's Thanksgiving. We haven't booked another Thanksgiving at my house, but we had a great time.
Yeah. Well, that's a prime example of going with the flow.
It is, isn't
you know,
it?
It really is. And we've had, and you and I could sit here and tell stories all afternoon long about the experiences that we've had with going with the flow. I think for me, the most profound was back in 2006, February 28th was my last day at my job because I was being laid off along with everyone else at the station because the station was being sold. March 1st, I get a phone call at 2:30 in the afternoon as I'm cleaning out my office. My wife's telling me that she just quit her job. And I'm sitting here thinking, do you know that I'm unemployed too? But for some reason, there was no fear. And we're sitting at, and I've told this story on this program before, there's no fear because we're sitting watching TV that evening. She comes over, sits down next to me. She says, I'm scared. I feel like we're on a precipice. And I said, well, you know, of everybody that I've interviewed and the workshops and the programs I've been through, the books and on and on and on, everybody says exactly the same thing. When you come to the edge of a cliff, or her word, precipice, you do two things. You jump and you trust. And again, there was no fear. And so for the next 3 months, we were in process of jumping and trusting. Put the house up for sale, packed everything up, had it shipped out here by the very company her father owned way back when. Found a place that took cats and dogs. We found work a month or two after we moved here, and so on and so on and so on. And I mean, it's like jump and trust. There's nothing left. But that's hard because of the messages that we are getting from so many corners of the world, whether it be the media or otherwise. What are your suggestions, recommendations, steps, affirmations, whatever you use to help people to remember that?
That's a really great question because it is scary to jump and trust and to assume that we're going to grow wings
yeah.
or there's going to be a wonderful breeze or that maybe we're only jumping like 2 inches.
Yeah.
So, you know, I actually talked about this once with a therapist years and years ago because I was quitting my job and beginning my practice as an energy healer, et cetera. And I said, it's just this huge deal. I could fall, you know, he'd be crushed on the rocks, never make another penny again, you know, this and that and the other thing. And she says, it's probably only a foot down that you're jumping.
Yeah.
And you know, that's what I do for myself, and I encourage clients to do, Richard, is like I don't image it as jumping off a cliff. I image this as like kind of going off like a little block of stones, because I know that the not just the wind will rise to hold me, but the ground will rise up.
Mm-hmm.
And think about it. When you look back, isn't there always a step, a stepping stone that precedes you actually taking a step? Regardless of what I've gone through in life, there is constantly a directive, a sign, an omen, a person shows up, you know, something is granted to me, whether it's in a dream or a real life person says, hey, I've got this for you. Years and years ago, I was right in between daycares, and my 14-year-old was maybe three, and I had to have daycare in order to work. You just can't have an ADHD 3-year-old running around when you're doing client work. It's like really not cool.
Right.
And honest to gosh, my current daycare person had quit because she was sick, and I had nothing for 2 days from then. Nothing. And I took my son to this little play area in a mall, and I'm just kind of musing this, and what I did was image that, you know, it was time to, you know, kind of step off in faith, but that the ground would rise up. I used that image. Talked to another mom I didn't know there, and she said, well, you know, why don't you try this daycare? Well, it ended up that it was a woman who worked in a little house called Cherub Haven who could not go to Cherub Haven, right?
Mm-hmm.
I knew her from church growing up. I knew her son. I called her and we were in within those 2 days. So for me, just that sense of knowing I am protected and knowing that I'm not going to do all the work, that Spirit's going to bring to me what I need, frankly, I think it hastens that process. It closes the chasm, it closes the gap, and it brings it. Even when there's challenging situations, you know, I remind myself of something Pema Chodron, one of the wonderful Buddhist monks, gurus out there, talks about. She says, you know, you really need to get out of this place of believing that there's experiences that are just good and bad. Of course, there's experiences that are more comfortable and less comfortable. And I always vote for the more comfortable. You know, I'd rather be in first class than third class. Thank you very much, right?
Mm-hmm.
However, she says, if you can just embrace what's coming and then know that you're immediately companioned with all the assistance that you need, everything will turn into a so-called positive or good experience. So that's what I do. I literally image the ground rising up to meet me. Not going to be a fall. It's just kind of a little bit of a jump, more than a leap. And then I assume that I'm being accompanied on absolutely every step. And, you know, even the weirdest stuff works out. I had a day where I don't know what was up in the air or down on earth. It doesn't make any difference. But I had these three clients who I watched reschedule themselves. Now, I'm not a part of this. My assistant is. I'm actually in between clients on the bathroom, in the bathroom watching all this happen. And, you know, they finally all fell into the right place or a place, 1, 2, 3, not one of them sitting on each other.
Hmm.
I thought, well, see, there you go, Cindy. It works out if you get out of the way sometimes. Do your part, but get out of the way. So
yeah.
That's the other part is we got to get out of our own way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. It's one of those things where I phrase it this way. And this was actually told to me, so it's not my phrase. Become part of the process and stop trying to control the process, which is, you know, can be again said the way you said it, you know, just go with the flow and so on and so on and so forth. I want to talk a little bit here now in this segment of the program about Cindy Dale and the work that she has been doing. Now, when we talked last time, I think you've been on maybe twice, once or twice, mm-hmm. early on in this series of programs since we started it back in 2007. And you are doing, I would consider to be, rather extraordinary work. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, thank you. I'm really having fun.
This is a job.
I know. I have to remind myself that sometimes. Actually, cleaning is a job for me. Cooking is a job. Doing my kids and doing this job that I do on a daily basis isn't much of a job. So I've got my priorities in the right place, I think. I have been enjoying myself working with clients, doing energy healing, but also putting out a lot of books. I think I have 15 books on subtle energy, way too many books on chakras, but I've got more coming, guys. Relationships, but from a spiritual point of view. So I've been doing a lot of writing, and I have 3 more books, I think, scheduled to come out next year or into, I'm not very good with years, but into 2013 and 2014, and quite a bit more teaching.
When did these books start? I mean, when did you start writing?
I started writing about 18 years ago. My very first book was called New Chakra Healing, published by Llewellyn. I remember it as bright, kind of green. You remember the colors with this little rainbow on it. And when it came out, my family was appalled because I come from a family full of doctors, maybe a couple engineers. And here comes Cindy toggling along with a book on like super weird stuff. And it wasn't cool back then. Not in Minnesota. Not in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Chakras were not cool. They were like what very, you know, hippie fringe people did. So it blew up the family, and, you know, but it really furthered my career doing energy work. And, Richard, since then, I have just been fascinated not just by the esoteric and spiritual knowledge about energy systems, chakras, meridians, intuition, but the science, because science has been advancing as well.
Doesn't that blow you away?
Quantum physics.
Doesn't that blow you away?
It blows me away. It does. It does. And it's exciting. Now, at one level, it doesn't blow me away, because I think what we've known for thousands of years to be true, you know it's true. Your heart knows. Of course your heart knows there's spirituality and spirit. Of course our heart knows that only 2% of visible light comprises the entire electromagnetic spectrum. And that means that we're probably only perceiving 2% of reality. I mean, our heart knows that.
Yeah.
But I think people like me growing up in kind of average America, you know, suburban schooling, learned to separate myself, learned to kind of put apple science, you know, kind of the Newtonian science, the apple falls, you bite it, you eat it, and you get on your way, right? Move apple trees so you're not hit on the head again, versus what I call orange science, which is all this mystical science. So I think I'd had that split, separating what I've learned to be true in Western civilization versus what I've known to be true in and through my heart and soul. So it's nice to have that getting band-aided together inside of myself, just as the world is putting all of this together as well.
Yeah. It is extraordinary work that you're doing, and when we come back from our break and our little segment with Beth McDonald, our astronomical and astrological assignment editor, we're going to talk more with you about not only the work you're doing, but we're also going to talk about the power that can be generated through the bringing together of two or more. And, of course, I'll access, because it's part of my history, those biblical passages that sort of support that and kind of lead us into that direction. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And we are talking with Cindy Dale, and we'll talk more with her in just a moment.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we're here with Cindy Dale, and her latest work is a collaboration with Andrew Ward called Togetherness, and we'll talk more about that in just a moment. Cindy, it's really, first of all, really nice to have you on the program as we start heading into the holidays, and Thanksgiving is just a few days away, and then we have, depending upon your, I guess, your religious upbringing and so forth, we have, now I can't even think of the name of the
Hanukkah.
Thank you very much.
Hanukkah, Christmas,
we
and
have
a number of other
another
experiences.
Others, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I know that there are those who, you know, they get a little upset about the fact that Christmas is taken out of the verbiage. I still say it, you know, because it's what it's called. And from my perspective, it's what I grew up with. But it's also part of the tradition in terms of what I know as having read the writings. And one passage in particular comes to mind as we start talking about this whole business of we're all coming together to celebrate, to reunite, and maybe have sort of a family or family reunion, those kinds of things. Maybe even this is the time of the year. Some people, you know, they've had some terse words with a relative or family member or an acquaintance or a friend, what have you, and they want to kind of clean that up before the new year starts. They want to start make amends, I guess, is one term. And one of the passages that comes to mind is, you know, where two or more are gathered in my name, there I am in the midst. And that also relates to power, because the question was asked, well, gee, you know, the things you're doing, and of course I am speaking of Jesus here, by his disciples, they're saying, hey, wow, that's pretty neat stuff you're doing there. I wonder, can we do that? And of course his response is, you know, you guys are going to be doing even greater works than this, okay? And, of course, a lot of what they were focused on was the physical manifestations of these miracles. And I think that what he was referring to in terms of the greater works had nothing to do with the physical manifestation. It had to do with the transformation of self. And so we're also talking about this transition into this, I guess we could say, new age with 12-21-12 coming up. People are referring to it in that fashion that, you know, we're transitioning. There's a certain level of ascension. There's a certain level of raising the consciousness of the people of the planet. But it seems to accelerate when people gather together. Can you talk about that?
I would love to talk about that. And I went to seminary, actually, Richard. So
really?
I did.
Wow.
I was working toward
That's
a master's
cool.
in divinity. Absolutely. So I have found the Bible, especially approached metaphorically, practically, you know, and really analyzing it, you know, from the time period, exegesis is called, from mm-hmm. the time period it was spoken,
right.
to, you know, to be full of brilliant illumination, as most religions and spiritualities are as well. You know, so, and of course, I'm sensitive to people who aren't Christians,
mm-hmm.
you know, or, you know, have kind of walked that path and are open on a, you know, kind of to a different path or road. You know, that I believe those words are meant for everybody, that it's, hey, when two or more of us are gathered, there will I be. You know, Christ is speaking as a spirit, as, you know, as somebody who's revealing the higher spirit, the highest spirit, the one, whatever it is we want to call, God, the Force, Allah, Kuan Yin. You know, he's saying there's true spiritual power when we're joined together. And I love your interpretation that that's not just about the miracles, you know, that look good, that you get the appearance and the shine, and wow, the person stood up and walked. And he even said, I think in a couple places in the New Testament, he said, you know, I do this to prove it to people, because otherwise they're not going to believe. The attitude I read into it was almost, I wish I didn't have to show them that they're loved and that they're worthy by having to demonstrate it. But it's sometimes the only way people believe is to have things proven to them. But think about your explanation that as we gather together in community, whether we're sitting in the same room, whether it's through the bond of belief, whether it's through, you know, this sense that there's new to come and it can be wonderful and brilliant and inclusive of everyone and good, exactly how much can transform. You know, to greet life with that kind of bonding and communal love and belief in the goodness of our humanity, and not just the two-leggeds, but the three-leggeds or the four-leggeds or ten-leggeds or whatever else we have, then we can truly be what Christians would call born again, open up the true selves that we are. You know, it's not about religion.
Right.
You know, it's about what's inside, that nugget that's inside that we need to open to.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've really seen demonstrated just quite literally the power of more than two people setting a declaration, which I think is even stronger than intention.
Right.
You know, just deciding to open to the best. I think about a seminar I was teaching a few years ago in Denver, and I had this absolutely amazing group of maybe 15 people in this four-day seminar. And you can imagine how punch-happy you get, you know, learning together 4 days into it. I mean, I was even funny, and I'm Norwegian, okay? We're not known for being funny.
Oh, well.
But I did a pretty good stand-up comedy, Norwegian comedy in there with Norwegian jokes, which most people don't find funny, but we're about 2.5 days into the process, and we decide we're going to help this particular gentleman in the class, his name was Larry, with his knees. He was a landscape architect, so he was constantly kneeling. So we just opened to the best. We just said, whatever spirit wants for this gentleman's healing, we all focused on it. He went home, he came back the next morning, and he said, my knees are healed. He said, I've had knee pain for 15 years.
Wow.
My knees are healed. Now, his ankles hurt.
One step at a time.
Exactly. You know, the pain moved, you know, kind of started to move out. We focused on the ankles, and by the next day, the ankles were well, too. And, you know, the earth took what she wanted to, and there we are. He was pain-free. You know, so there's a little bit of a step at a time, but talk about the power of oneness when people are bonded by love. Not jealousy, not greed, not competitiveness, but by asking for and holding for the best outcome. And we're coming into the season of that, no matter which way people celebrate the spirit of being, you know, both human and divine at the same time, being, you know, children who are loved by something or someone, some being that's greater and all-inclusive. What a wonderful thing to celebrate.
Yeah. I like the word declare or declaration. It does have a much stronger sound to it. I'm going to say it's a harder word when you say it, declaration as opposed to intention. But that hardness of that word, it's like you're building a foundation with that declaration. It's a brick that you're laying down.
It is. And you're planting yourself firmly in the promises of the universe, in the birthright, you know, to have your essential self, your spirit, your true self be continually supported. So it is a harder word, but there's something kind of gritty about it.
Yes, exactly.
It says, hey, I just declare this, and spirit declares it with me, and let's get on with it.
Exactly.
Intention is kind of a little wimpy. I get it.
sure.
It is a little wimpy.
But I think it was a stepping stone. It's like one of those stepping stones you talked about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. And so I'm waiting. Mm-hmm. I'm waiting to hear from Deepak Chopra's daughter has a website called intention.com. And I'm blanking on her first name, and my apologies to her. But,
no, I can picture her. She's on my website. Facebook.
Yes.
Yeah, she's wonderful.
Beautiful
mm-hmm.
woman. Loved having her on the mm-hmm. program some time ago when she started intention.com. But I can hardly wait for her, if she indeed does this, and I wouldn't be surprised. I'm a firm believer in the 100th monkey theory, that there will be a declaration.com, the next evolution in that process. Because when you think about making a declaration, declaring something,
mm-hmm.
it's very emphatic. And I
mm-hmm.
take a look, for example, I mean, we go back to some of the more famous declarations, such as our own Declaration of Independence.
Yeah.
You know, it's we the people. And it doesn't happen without we the people in any form, whether it's governmental or otherwise. It doesn't
right.
happen. So
That is so true. It's we the people declare this. And if you look at the word declaration, what's in the middle? But clear, as in clarity.
Ah,
you have to get
okay.
really clear to make a declaration.
Yeah, you do.
Yep. In French, the D-E is of, so it's of clarity.
Wow. Wow.
There's a little work to go into making a declaration in advance.
Yeah. You know, I even thought about that too, because you know, a lot of other countries, you know, they formulate the ways in which they want to live, and they put it down on paper, and they call it their constitution. But I often wonder if they started with some kind of declaration. We did. I don't know why we did, but we did. And I think maybe it had to do with the fact that we wanted to say to the powers that be in that day, look, this ain't working for us, okay? And we want a new way. Well, in this day, 2012, there are people, whether they're called the occupiers or any other name, and I'm among those who's saying this, this ain't working for us. There's a new way. We have to find it. I don't have the answers. Do not elect me as some leader to lead you, because I don't have the answers. I'm looking just like you. So together, we can find that new way of living that will work for every single human being, regardless of whatever category you want to throw in there. And I think that a lot of people are starting to get that. Not just that they're tired of the way things are and they want something different, but that we need a declaration.
I think that's brilliant. We need that bell, that resounding bell.
Yeah.
You know, I think of another biblical story when Jericho is taken down by Joshua.
Oh, yes.
You know, with a horn, with a trumpet.
Yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily need to be, you know, just one set of beliefs. I think usually what's most important is that it's something that people cannot just rally around, but feel.
Yes.
You can feel it. And it's already in our hearts.
Yeah.
We already know what's really true. I really believe that.
Yeah. But it's not something that you are manipulated into feeling. It's something that you know. Deep down inside. I loved my interview with Greg Braden when we were talking about his book, Spontaneous Healing of Belief. He talked about how what he is envisioning is a transition from belief to knowing, that we won't need beliefs anymore because we will just know. And I think that we're on the verge of that.
Mm-hmm. That's a perfect way to say it. And that's why it didn't feel quite right to me to have it be, you know, a collection of ideas.
Right.
Certainly principles, but it's knowing.
Yeah.
And, you know, we do know.
Yeah.
We know. I know how many times I look back in my life and I have to be very forgiving and compassionate toward myself, because I have to admit, you know, I kind of did know best. It's kind of like, you know, as a real extreme example, I come from a very alcoholic family system and have attended Al-Anon forever. And, you know, I played with alcohol myself years and years ago. But, you know, I knew I shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
I knew it.
Right.
I knew it. I did it. I'd learned.
Mm-hmm.
There's some wisdom gathered.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like, we kind of know. And, you know, there's things that we really don't know. Okay. We experience it and then you decide.
Yeah. It is an incredible journey. It has been said that those of us who are here today, it has been said that we are heroes, and we haven't really done anything yet other than just we're here. And these people that I've talked with who have used this term to describe those of us who are here, they're speaking from an eternal perspective, from a perspective that we have chosen to be here in this time, in this age, to not only experience, but be a part of the changes that are upon us, the transition that we've already embarked upon, and that not everybody has chosen to be in this time period. And,
that's right, and a lot of us have chosen. Look, we have almost 7 billion people.
Yeah, a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. We've made quite the collective choice, haven't we?
We have indeed. Speaking of choices, this is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And as a note, before we get any closer to any of the endings of this program, I want to let our listeners know, Cindy, that this interview is much longer than just the radio program or the A to Zen broadcast, that we have what's called an afterview, and that this interview or afterview that continues on can only be heard through the archives at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. So it's sort of an incentive. Now, some would say, oh, geez, you're trapping me into coming back to your website and you're going to try to sell me something. There is nothing for sale on my website. There is a page called the Missions page where I ask for people who are interested in supporting the work, but that's it. And there is no hard sell. I just tell you, here's what we're here doing. If you want to be a part of it, help us out. And I leave it at that. But when you come back to the website and you listen to the afterview as part of the entire interview, you're going to get a lot of neat information. And I have to say, Cindy, that when I started doing that, I thought this is kind of a neat idea because it's almost like, well, yeah, I know. I heard 45, 50, 55 minutes of your interview. You mean there's more? Yeah, there's more. And that's
that is really exciting. Yeah. Very integritous, too, Richard. Thank you for that.
And we have a lot of interviews that are like that, but I don't always mention it. And so it's like a surprise to them. I go, okay, well, he's supposed to end the interview. It was only 46 minutes or 50 minutes, and he's still talking, and she's still talking, and they're still talking. And I like the information. It's like, wow, how long is this thing? I've had an hour and 20-minute interview before that's up on the website for people to listen to because there's just so much to share. And one of those things that we want to talk about, and we've actually delved into it a little bit, and that is the general concept, if you will, and we'll go ahead and get into specifics about creating a sustainable, creating and deepening sustainable love through your book, Togetherness, with your co-author. Tell us who Andrew Ward is, by the way.
Well, you know, Andy is a good friend of mine. I have known him because of one of my best friends here in town is related to him for, I don't know, maybe 15 years. And he is a therapist out in the Washington, D.C. area, has worked with 50,000 clients. I've worked with about 35,000 clients. We sat with a lot of people witnessing their growth, their pain, and you know, kind of what emerges out of pain as well. And we were talking about our practices one day and trying to compare what we thought the main issue is that people bring to the table. And certainly if there's a healthcare issue, that's foremost, because it's the old saying, if you don't have your health, you don't have anything. Mm-hmm. You really got to have your health.
Yes.
So I would say the second most pressing arena people ask about is love. Often it's romantic love, but you'd be surprised how often people talk about the struggles they're having with friendships, as parents, as children of parents, and it's love. It's love that makes the world go round. And we were kind of asking ourselves, well, you know, what is this love? There's so many definitions, agape love, eros love, this kind of love, that kind of love. There seems to be 32 different flavors plus running. And, you know, we said, you know, in the end, love really needs to have maybe a different word associated with it so that people can grok it, so we can feel it.
Oh, you used a great word. What a great word.
Togetherness.
No, grok. Grok.
Grok. Oh, you love that word.
What
so do I.
And I bet you most people do not know where that comes from.
I know it from the Kahuna tradition.
Oh, really?
You know it from?
No, I know it from the book Stranger in a Strange Land.
That's a good book.
To us. And
wow.
Believe it or not, I'm still reading it. I haven't finished it yet, and I've been reading it for 15 years.
There's a lot in that book.
Exactly. But anyway, back to assimilating, making it a part of every cell of your being, this concept of togetherness.
That's what grokking is.
Yeah.
Where you absorb it.
Yeah.
And togetherness is a way of understanding love that we can get in our body, in our mind, and in our soul. In fact, in the book, I use a little passage from one of the Winnie the Pooh books, which, you know, they're just kind of wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
and heartwarming and
yeah.
honeywarming all the way around. And in this passage, Pooh is sitting there, and Piglet, the little pig, comes up and holds his hand, and Winnie says, "What's that all about?" And Piglet says, "I just wanted to be sure of you." So I think that's what we're looking for in love, whether it's that heart-beating, love-dove, romantic, or friendship, or even with our dog. I have two dogs, and I can tell you for sure they want to be sure of me, yeah. or life goes amok.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so that's what Andy and I are really talking about in our book, from different perspectives. Mm-hmm. Myself as intuitive consultant, energy healer. Himself as mainly a couples counselor, a traditional therapist who has studied a lot of spirituality and different avenues himself. Is the what can we converge on? And it's about togetherness.
Yeah. It brings up an analogy that I've used quite often, and that is that God, the Creator, Supreme Being, whatever name you wish to give, created the universe. And I'm sure that there are at least a minimum of 7 billion planets in the universe that each one of us could live on as solitary beings, living solitary lives. But if you take a look around you, you realize that those 7 billion people aren't on 7 billion individual planets. We're all here. And that tells me very clearly that we were intended to live and play and work together.
Absolutely. And I often think of God, you know, as trying to get through our noggins the idea, like, you know, don't look up to me. Look around.
Yes.
Look around. This is where you are. Don't worry about what comes after death. I mean, it's interesting to know. I've even written a book on it. But it's like, look around. This is where you are. And look at who I put in your life. Start there. Start in. Start around you. And you know, that's where love is. That's where God is.
Did you ever read the 5-book series, Life and Teachings in the Masters of the Far East?
Yes,
there's a wonderful section in there where the group that's traveling comes to this cave. And in this cave, they meet both Jesus and Pontius Pilate. But what was so profound about that meeting was Jesus' conversation with these gentlemen and what he revealed about how he felt about humanity. And humanity's separation from him, that he never intended that, that he wishes that they hadn't put him up on a pedestal, that they hadn't separated him and made him divine in the way that they did, because it makes it almost impossible for him to commune one-on-one or in group with us, because we deified him to the point where we can't do anything but look up at him.
We can't look up, and we can't, in a weird way, look down in shame.
Yeah.
Feeling so unprepared, unequal. And, you know, I've had, especially several years ago, several what I would consider to be visitations from Jesus. And one of them really strikes me. It was at Easter time, and I was in an inner city church, and the pastor was preaching about how much we owe Jesus and how, you know, he's the supreme being and commander. And I have this vision of Jesus walking across the altar with the cross on his back. And in my mind, I didn't say it out loud, I said, you know, do you need help? Do you really want to carry that? That looks really heavy. I've never quite gone beyond 6-year-old thinking, okay? I mean,
that's okay.
Really, if somebody's walking by with this cross, are you going to really kind of go, well, that's just fine with me? And what happened in my vision is he moved himself from under the cross. The cross hung in place sideways, and he looked at me and he said, in all these years, nobody's ever asked me that. And he said, it was done at the cross. I walk with you. I don't walk in front of you or behind you. I walk with you.
Yes. Yes.
Isn't that a wonderful way to look at it?
I grew up in my career for 15 years working for a Christian station. It's the best education I say I was ever paid for.
Great.
But I heard some things that didn't make a lot of sense to me and that's part of the reason why I am where I am. I was actually labeled by the general manager at that time as a casualty of Christian broadcasting because I wasn't carrying the banner. I was, so to speak, turning my back on the faith, which was farthest from the truth. I used to say to people that, you know, I'm on my search. And they would say, well, once you've found Jesus, your search is over. And I said, actually, to the contrary, once I found Jesus, it's just begun because there's so much out there. But I found it so fascinating to communicate with these folks and learn from them, but hopefully share with them my perspectives a little bit, that there is more out there, that our experiences are much more than what's written down or said by someone else, that when you start denying your experiences because they're not authorized, then you start denying yourself and who you really are. And that's not good, because I am today the sum of, if you will, some of the parts from the very beginning. I wouldn't be who I am today if I had taken out those pieces that people said I should take out. And thank God we can't take them out.
Exactly. Well, I mean, and the analogy that just quite simplistically pops into my mind is that of a rose or a flower with many, many petals. I mean, gosh, you know, what kind of gardener is going to go in there and take out 5/8 of the petals, you know, just because, oh, there's a tiny spot here or this one's not quite up to this or that, you're going to have a really straggly looking rose. It's not going to be a rose.
Do you get a chance to get away? Because I don't know exactly where you live in terms of the country and whether it's urban or rural. I live in a rural area and I come down to the urban interface, so to speak. And I can't wait sometimes to get back to the rural, to get back into the mountains, to get back to where, okay, I can still hear the highway, but I've got oak trees and I've got scrub brush and I have chickens and I have birds in the trees. And sometimes we'll have a bear that'll wander through the property or a bobcat or what have you. Or I can just sit at night and listen to the crickets and reconnect and slow down and listen to that still small voice where I can't hear that when I'm down in the urban interface.
I so understand what you're saying. I live in suburbia. I'm still raising a 14-year-old who has to get to school, baseball, hockey, football, friends' houses, and is, you know, very much involved. But we get away as often as we can. I'm constantly going up north in Minnesota, which is where I live. You always have a cabin and you always go up north. Even if you don't own the cabin and you go south, you just call it the cabin up north, no matter which direction. It's just a Minnesota thing.
Well, it's a northern part of the United States. Okay.
Exactly. So we get out as often as we can. I try to take away from town breaks as often as I can. But, you know, it's congested. I cannot get the same level of deep intuition, even though I use it for a living, in this crowded community as I can if I'm in the desert, the jungle, the mountains, etc. I just can't do it.
Yeah.
I do my best. We go outside. I walk the dogs in the marsh. And, you know, you find your places that are havens.
Yeah.
But it's not quite the same, as you know, when you're surrounded.
Yeah. My wife and I, when we first moved here and we got the chickens and I created the chicken run and so forth, I had a little wooden stool inside the chicken run, and then we had some other chairs outside, and she would come out, and of course this is typical Santa Barbara lifestyle. She'd come out with a glass of wine and I'd come out with my chosen beverage. I would go into the chicken run and sit down on the wooden stool. She would sit outside the run and watch the chickens with her glass of wine. And I would have the chickens jumping up on my leg, on my knee, you know, and just having that experience, you know, I know they probably would refer to them as domestic chickens, but I don't see that
your
much
pet
domestic
chickens.
Yeah, well, they're not pets. I mean, they lay eggs and we feed them and we let them pretty much do what they are going to do, choose the pecking order and those kinds of things, because that's what they do. We don't try to control them. And that's a big key right there. We go back almost to the beginning of this program about becoming part of the process, not trying to control it. years ago, I was trying to control animals and get them to do what I wanted them to do. Now, having experienced what I have here in the last 10 years with my wife and animals, cats and dogs, and we've had fish and we've had birds and so forth, is understanding why they are doing what they're doing so that... And not getting upset or angry at them. I mean, we have animals that'll make a mess. Well, why? Why did they do that? They did it for a reason. And it's
connecting. And they're being who they are. It's their consciousness.
That's it.
That they're representing a level and a band of consciousness, and we need every single band of consciousness on this planet to create what we are as well as where we're going.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful you've got that experience of being around chickens being chickens. You don't exactly want them being turkeys or dogs.
No.
They need to be chickens.
And we even had turkeys on the property that were running around here free and wild. I mean, they've since disappeared. We have a pretty good idea how that happened. But they were great, and they would come when we called them, and we would feed them some of the bird seed and so forth. And it was a great experience. So I think that, and that's one of the things, too, that I hear quite often on this program from my guests, Cindy. If you're wanting to reconnect, listen to that, you want an opportunity to listen to that still small voice, then find that place. Specifically, they say, you need to get back to nature, wherever you can find it, even if you're in a suburbia.
And you can find it anywhere. You truly, truly can. I mean, I'm in suburbia, and I found the marsh. I can walk the dogs to. It takes 20 minutes around. And when we're back there, I don't know. I'm a different person. I'm in my body. But you can tell that the dogs are being more of dog. You know, they're canine.
Yeah.
They're smelling. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how we're made to be. And I just even play and get out of my yard as often as I possibly can. I mean, you know, for somebody who works on the phone, lives in the suburbs, I'm probably out 2 hours a day, and that's even in maybe not the worst of winter. When it's below zero, I'm done. I'm not going out. You know what? It's fireplace and meat. You know, let's be really realistic. She
fireplace,
is like kind of...
hot cocoa.
Yeah. You got it. And the dogs can stay in right next to me.
That's right.
So, and they don't want to go out either.
I don't
blame
them.
So we take our vote and we win.
That's right. Exactly. We're talking with Cindy Dale. She's the co-author of Togetherness, Creating and Deepening Sustainable Love. I find that interesting that the word sustainable was used as opposed to, say, lasting, everlasting, complete, or some other word, because that word, like the word quantum, is used an awful lot these days because everybody is looking at finding ways of doing things that they want to do that is going to discontinue the harm to self, others, and the environment, as well as sustain them. Farming, for one instance, organic farming. It's a quote-unquote sustainable process. Whereas with the chemicals, it's not sustainable because eventually the soil is destroyed and all of that is within the soil.
And the consumers are destroyed by what they're eating.
Exactly.
So there you are.
So give me a little insight into this concept of sustainable love.
Well, and we did choose the word deliberately because to be able to sustain love, as we can all guess, takes some energy. I mean, it takes so-called work on ourselves. It takes that constant self-examination, self-acknowledgement. It takes us expressing who we are, being open to that in and from the other person. And, you know, so there's kind of a description of process with the word sustainable, but it also kind of begs the question of evaluating our relationships to ask ourselves, is this a sustainable relationship in this form or not? You know, or is this taking too much out of me? Is this too hard? You know, am I the only one giving and they're the only one receiving? That's just not going to work. And so there's this sense of balance, even in relationship, that we get to ask those questions. We get to ask, is this good for me? We get to even ask, am I being good for the other person? What if we ask that question as
Ooh,
well?
Yeah.
Is me leaving my laundry you know, in the middle of the bedroom, good for that other person when they're the person who has to walk all over it and do it. So it's a two-way communication for us to evaluate self and other, but the relationship as a whole as well.
Yeah. It is, it has been said that, you know, being in a relationship is quite challenging. I think that one of the other aspects that is somewhat frustrating for me is how the stereotypes are continually being perpetuated, especially in the media. As much as I enjoy some of the television programs that we watch, specifically the comedies, I'm not much on the dramas and the horror stuff. But unfortunately, a lot of the comedies, you know, the guy is usually the idiot and the boob and, you know, doesn't have a clue as to what's going on, you know, and the woman is the one that's in control. And I know that each gender, male, female, has its, and this is now back to reality, has their own characteristics as a gender. But I'm wondering just how positive, how supportive that really is of a sustainable relationship when you are constantly being reminded that, you know, well, the guy, now he's going to go off and do his own thing and he knows he's going to get in trouble and he'll have to deal with it later, and so he will. Rather than picking up the clothes because he knows the wife is going to have to walk over them, so he picks them up just because that's the conscious thing to do.
Exactly. And, you know, it really is, as I'm sure you and your wife have experienced, sometimes a bit challenging to get out of our gender-specific ideas.
Yeah.
And not fall into those traps. You know, as a woman who's been on the other end, who's done the laundry and been the nag, I've had to look for alternative ways to relate, you know, even from that place.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that laundry, I may not go do it. That may end up on his side of the bed.
Yeah.
So it's there when he goes to bed at night. And, you know, there you are. So I think we have to get kind of creative.
Yeah.
Not mean, but creative, right, to get out of how we're raised to be. Right. And it's, as we're talking, Richard, we're looking for a new paradigm. We're looking,
yes,
for a renewable paradigm.
Yes, yes.
We'll use another sustainability word, a renewable one, where a couple or a friendship or parent and child can keep renewing their relationship as the individuals change. I mean, if I related to my 24-year-old, that's my oldest son, the same way now as I did when he was 4, he wouldn't be talking to me. He wouldn't be talking to me.
Yeah.
But as well, if he related to me the same way, I would have some real troubles with that. So we've stayed very up to date on our individual transformations. And he's one of these young men. Every time he texts me, now they don't call this these days. You know what? They don't do person to person on the phone. It's all, you have text relationships with your kids.
Right.
But that's okay, because yeah, I can text. I'm a really good texter. Every single time he texts me, he goes, "I love you, Mom." At 24, that warms my heart.
But the difference between that text to your 24-year-old or your 14-year-old is different than the text to somebody that you friended on Facebook that you've never met. Yeah, you've seen their pic on the website and you've seen all the other photographs, but you've never met them. You've never had any kind of one-on-one experience with them. And that isn't, that experience, in terms of warming your heart, can't be there because there's really no emotional connectedness there. Is there? Or am I wrong?
Nope, I'm not. You know, I have a Facebook and a Twitter and all this and that and the other thing. But frankly, I don't fool myself and think that they're my friends. My friends are the people I call when, to be graphic, I have snot all over because I'm crying.
Right.
Right? My friends are the people who call me when they want to celebrate something, and I am just as happy that things are going great for them as I would be if they were going great for myself. Yeah. You got to have connection, and it needs to be emotional, or it's acquaintanceship. Now, there's nothing wrong with having acquaintances, but, you know, we're not supposed to fool ourselves, and I think a lot of people these days think there is togetherness,
yeah,
in this kind of light sort of a way. When you don't, it takes years to grow a friendship. And it doesn't happen overnight, just the same way it takes to grow an oak tree.
Yeah.
There really is something to the more time, the more care, the more maturity, the deeper the roots.
The social media genre, if you will, you know, can work in a lot of different ways for people, I suppose. But from my perspective, and maybe, I don't know, it's one of those things where maybe when my parents were growing up listening to our music, they, oh, that music is terrible. And now we're kind of saying the same kind of thing, only in the context of social media. But I would have to say that, matter of fact, an acquaintance of mine, who I don't text or Facebook or anything, I know this person face to face, shared with me how he was at a restaurant with his girlfriend, and somebody walked up to him and said, hi, so-and-so. Yeah, we're friends on Facebook. My friend did not know who this person was. They might be friends on Facebook. It kind of freaked him out.
Yeah, I'm not sure I would do that.
Yeah.
You know, they call them Facebook friends. I think of them as Facebook acquaintances. You just simply can't know somebody that deeply. It doesn't mean I don't care.
Right.
If somebody posts like my mom died or this is happening,
sure,
there's genuine compassion that I feel for that person.
Yeah.
But I also know that I can't do anything about it.
Exactly.
I'm not in their lives in a way that I can really be a support or vice versa.
And I also know that this medium has been used in many ways to bring about change. Groups of people will, you know, send out their texts, they'll tweet or whatever the process is, and people will gather together to accomplish something, and they accomplish it and they move on, which is great because they have to come together in order to do it in some fashion. You know, but I think some of the other aspects of it are, and again, this is just my perspective, are kind of wasted. And
I agree.
I'd like to see us getting back to more of the one-on-one relationship. We just had a pet pass away. Just a matter of fact, it was a week ago, and our neighbors back in Phoenix knew this pet and grew up with him as well, and he was a 25-year-old cat. And he passed away, and we knew it was coming. He was old, and we knew it was coming, so it wasn't as huge a trauma as if a sudden death. But I said, I need to call Bill in Phoenix, get him on the phone. I'll put him on speakerphone, and I will just do a running commentary as I process, as we anoint the body, as we wrap the body, as we place the body, and we place the things in the grave with the body, and so on and so forth. And share our thoughts after we cover the grave. And that's what we did. And to me, that was, I thought about doing that, and there was nothing that was telling me I shouldn't do that because that's not the right thing to do. It was like, no, they knew him, and it, at least give them the opportunity to be a part of it. They can always say no. And he chose to be a part. He chose to be a part of it.
It's connection.
Yeah,
that's
and
connection.
It's connection.
That
yeah.
connection.
Doesn't work with social media, you know? Yeah, I could have taken pictures, and I could have posted, okay, this is what we did and so forth. But it's like those pictures and that text just doesn't have the same, that doesn't have the same energy. And
no, and it's not designed for it either.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't believe. Mm-hmm.
Before we wrap up the program, two more questions for you.
Okie doke.
Who is Cindy Dale?
That's a really fun question. Do you know, I get an answer, but it's just because it pops in my head, Richard. I see a balloon, to be honest. You know, what do they call them? The real balloons, where you get in the basket and it's multicolored.
Oh, hot air balloons, yeah.
Yeah, and it rises up and it comes down. I think that's kind of who I am. Sometimes I'm on the ground, sometimes I'm in the air, kind of swinging with the breeze, looking for new ideas. I think I'm a hot air balloon.
Interesting. Very interesting.
It is a little odd, but it is interesting.
I like that. I like that. That's a wonderful image. And what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing?
I hope that I can witness in, through, and for people their expansion. I don't know what the word really means when I say the word expansion. You know, it can be something small where somebody comes to realize that they're loved by their parent or they love their own child. It might be where they get this great idea for a career. It might be, you know, that they realize that they really need a kitten and it's time to get a kitten in their life. That's all it is. It's really just to play that part of witness so people know that there's some care. Mm. I don't think it's more complicated than that.
Well, I here in Santa Barbara can tell you where you can go to get a kitten, and that's ASAP out in Goleta, California. We foster for them, as a matter of fact, and my wife has taken on the task not only of taking in mamas who are pregnant, and then they give birth in the house, and we raise them and nurse them through till they're 2 pounds and old enough to be fixed and then put up for adoption. But she's also chosen another end of the spec, the other end of the spectrum, and that is hospice care.
Oh, that's really what a gift to give.
And on the one hand,
what a beautiful gift.
And on the one hand, who in the world, in their quote unquote right mind, would choose to take in an old cat you know is going to die? Well, it isn't about a right mind. It's about
a right heart.
Yes.
It's about heart.
Yeah.
And I'm very honored to even just hear about that gift to those cats and the rest of the world, too.
Yeah. Well, we feel strongly, especially about the kittens and the mama, because we know that the love and the care that we give them, as well as the association with our own cats, we have 6 of our own and a dog, they get acclimated to these other animals, plus the love that we give them. We know we're sending them out into the world, and I can only imagine what kind of families they'll be drawn to that need just that very thing.
That's beautiful. And yeah. Back to the heavens, too.
Yes.
You do both sides.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. That's
exactly.
Beautiful, Richard. Beautiful.
So Cindy Dale, co-author of Togetherness, Creating and Deepening Sustainable Love, Andrew Wald, along with Deborah Evans. Tell us a little bit about her before we wrap up the program.
Deborah is an amazing writer and editor. She's worked with some of the biggest names, and Debbie Ford, for instance, and I love Deborah. Love Deborah Evans. And if you need an editor, Deb's the way to go. Deb's the way to go. People can just send me an email through my website, and I'd connect them into Deborah Evans.
As well as a quote from one of my favorite people, Greg Braden, on the front cover of the book. Cindy, I want to thank you so much for joining us.
I'm thrilled. I actually feel very honored. And everybody get that turkey cooked.
Oh,
and
my
turn
gosh.
The oven on.
Yeah, be sure to turn the oven on. Yes, that's a key.
Turn the oven on. That's my advice.
Absolutely. Well, Cindy Dale, thank you so much. Before we go, how do they get a hold of you? What's your website address?
Easiest way is the website, cindydale.com, CYNDIDALE.com.
Great. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're giving you choices. We're giving you knowledge of those choices so that you can make your dreams come true. And until next Saturday at this time, love to Lal.